Welcome to a special edition of the Pac-12 Hotline podcast, everyone. We are on location at the Pac-12 office, sitting down with Commissioner Larry Scott as part of a series on his 10 years at the helm of the conference. We're going to talk current affairs, news developments, look at the sweep of his 10 years in charge, maybe some hits and misses, and certainly pivot towards the future and what some of the challenges are for the conference down the road. Thanks for doing this. And I wanted to start, if you don't mind, with news. This morning, the morning of our recording here, UCLA's Dan Guerrero, the LA Times reported he's stepping down. I wanted to ask you about Los Angeles, the Los Angeles schools, their kind of place in the conference universe, and your view of what the collective kind of needs from them, right? Because now SC's got a vacancy at AD, UCLA's got a vacancy, SC has a new president, UCLA's president may or may not be retiring soon. How do you view LA?
Yeah. Well, first of all, we're losing a great leader with Dan's retirement. I knew it was going to be in the next year or two, but he's really a legend in college athletics.
Yep.
I mean, he's chair of the men's basketball committee. He's been on every, major prestigious national body with NACTA and others, and certainly in our league, been kind of the dean of athletics directors, certainly over most of my 10 years
right
here. So big shoes to fill there. And he leaves a great legacy over a long career there. LA is our biggest market. It's the second largest market in the country. And the USC brand, particularly in football,
yep,
the UCLA brand, particularly in basketball, UCLA being, toe-to-toe with Stanford as the winningest, most successful all-around athletics department of all time. It's super important. Both of those schools are successful, well-led, and doing well, particularly in the sports of football and basketball, respectively. So, I'm certainly hoping that we get really strong leadership in the athletics director positions at those two schools. I mean, it's good for all members of the conference when USC and UCLA are firing on all cylinders.
Moving along news-wise, any day now, California Governor Gavin Newsom is going to sign the Senate Bill 206, allowing athletes in the state to get compensated for the use of their name, image, likeness. I assume that the conference's position on that matter has not changed since it began its way working through the legislative process?
It's not. I think when I was last asked about it publicly, I said we're against anything that could lead to the professionalization of college athletics. And I think what's become pretty clear, especially over the last few days, is, there's chaos and that this is not something that makes sense on a state-by-state basis. Just over the last few days, South Carolina, seeing what's planned in California, decided, okay, we'll do that, plus let's add a $5,000 trust fund stipend after someone graduates. New York sees South Carolina do that and said, I got a better idea. Okay, let's take what South Carolina is doing, but let's give student athletes a 15% cut of all revenues. So as anticipated, I mean, there are unintended consequences of what California has contemplated that I think would be very harmful to California universities and the student athletes. First of all, it's pretty clear already. It's chaotic, and college sports is a national system of recruiting and competition. It doesn't belong with the states, number one. Number two, what I said previously is obviously coming to four, which is, the idea of let's just do something around NIL quickly escalates into let's just pay the players. And there are people out there that want them to be employees and want to professionalize college sports. And I think that would be a terrible thing for California universities and student athletes. And many more would be harmed than would be helped.
What do you think the end game is here, right? The working group, of which Rick George is a member, Colorado Athletic Director, I believe late October is when they're supposed to present their recommendations. Is this going to end up in court? How do you see the whole thing playing out with four of your institutions so heavily involved?
Yeah, it's hard to anticipate. I think we'll have to take it a step at a time. You know, from my perspective and the leaders of our university's perspective, I think we've always been open to looking at, is there a way to improve things for student athletes? I think the Pac-12 has been a real leader in reform. You'll probably recall the 2014 letter signed by our 12 presidents, kind of calling for reform, which helped lead to going to full cost of attendance, better health care coverage for student athletes, loosened restrictions around nutrition, easing of transfer policies. There's been a lot of benefit improvement for student athletes over the last several years, and we're very supportive of examining and looking to reform different things. And if there's a way to look at NIL and loosen and do some common sense things that don't cross the line to get into professionalism and student athletes compensated, I think we'll be very supportive and very engaged. And Rick George, as you mentioned, representing our conference, is, you know, a real leader in that effort. So I think what sometimes gets overlooked is that there has been a lot of change in college sports. There has been a lot of improvement for student athletes. And I think there may be some positive that comes out of this, an examination of NIL. But clearly some of the legislative proposals are really proposing going much further and crossing the line of amateur sports, and people want to turn into semi-pro.
Could you see the conference filing a lawsuit, or would that be left, do you think, maybe to the NCAA?
I think in all likelihood it's something the NCAA would lead on. I don't know what our role might be there if we went down that path, but I imagine we'd be quite supportive of any effort to make clear that college sports is a national system, and the idea that state by state you could have different rules that define what a student athlete is and how they could be recruited would be chaotic and not good for anyone. I don't think really makes sense.
One other more immediate matter, is there an update on the search for a strategic partner?
There's no specific update. I mean, no news, but we're still very active and having really interesting conversations with partners. We've been at it now for the better part of a year. I think the process really started in January when our CEO group authorized us to kind of look at this. And you know, you followed this closely. This isn't the first time we've kind of done a look-in during the 12 years. There have been various times where we've said, okay, let's take a look. Let's bring an outside consultant and get a valuation of what we have. Let's test the market. Is there a strategic partner that makes sense? So I think we've regularly been open to see at different stages, especially with as dynamic as the media market's been and the shifting sands. And so this is kind of the latest effort at that. We certainly don't, you know, we're getting close, so we don't really need to do anything at this stage. But, you know, we're aware that there's a need, a desire for more money, and having a partner that might be able to help us in the lead up to 23 when we'll renegotiate our future media rights is interesting to look at. And what we've learned is, through the process, is that there's a lot of interest, you know, from financial institutions, media leaders, tech leaders, in what we're doing. It's convinced me, and I think our members, that we're sitting on a lot of unrealized value and that we've got reason to be confident in what's going to happen when our rights become available. Some of the smartest minds out there, some of the people that make the biggest bets on sports, are really interested in working with us. We've narrowed the field. That was a key decision that our CEOs made back in May. They weren't really interested in doing something with a pure financial institution, even though we had a lot of interesting offers at the kind of valuations that we were hoping for and really great terms. They said, we don't want to do something with private equity or financial firm. Let's narrow the focus. And the charge I was given by our schools at the president level is narrow the focus to those that might be strategic partners, media companies, tech companies that could possibly help with an infusion of capital or schools financially, but also maybe help us in other ways. And so that narrows the group that we're talking about, and it's kind of slowed down the process. But, you know, it also has been, I think, really helpful for our presidents and chancellors, many of whom are new, as well as our ADs. Yes. And, you know, we've had a lot of change there and continues to get kind of a look in and a check in. And I think it's been a confidence builder to see the reaction we've gotten to say, hey, you know, we know we've had our challenges. We know we've fallen behind when it comes to, you know, network distribution, network revenue. but our strategy and what is likely going to happen has really been validated by this process and the amount of interest that we've had. So it's been educational. I mean, even this week I was in New York for a variety of meetings, including with the president of a network, and met with them. And, you know, the idea that our rights are coming up for negotiation 2023 right now, given what's happening when the NFL is going to go before us and all that,
right,
seems pretty appealing to people, that a lot of things are going to sort out in terms of the role of tech companies and whether they're right. going to be bidders in sports. We know ESPN, Fox, CBS, Turner, NBC are gearing up, not only through their linear networks, but now they'll have streaming options as well. A lot of that's going to sort out by the time we go. And, you know, I've got discussions this weekend. I'm going to be with the leaders of another major network talking about it. So this process has allowed us, in a way, to get some early visibility on how people are looking at our rights. And it's allowed us to kind of start conversations and will help inform our strategy going forward, whether we take a partner in the next few months or not.
And I would think, like you said, you're getting close, right? For a deal to take effect in the summer of 2024, you would probably have it finished up in the spring of 2023.
Yes, that would be similar to last summer. You may recall we announced our deals with ESPN and Fox in the spring of 2011 and then announced the formation of the Pac-12 networks a couple of months later. So it was like a little bit over a year before the next cycle started. So if the same timing held, you're right, it'll be in the first half of 2023 that we sort out whatever our future arrangements will be, which will kick in the 24-25 academic year.
And do Fox and ESPN have an exclusive negotiating window with you all?
So I can't disclose a particular contractual term, but that is the norm in the industry. I guess I could say that.
So basically by the fall of 2022, things are really going to be gearing up. So when I think about the potentially selling, the schools selling a piece of their future, it's that bridge is pretty short at this point, right? We're almost at 2020, so it's just a couple of years, really.
It is. It's not long. So that's why I think wisely our presidents and chancellors concluded, look, just to do something for financial reasons right now doesn't make sense. But if there's a group out there that could help with the kind of shorter term financial infusion that makes everyone feel better in terms of the revenue gap, competitiveness, and all that, but still makes sense as a strategic partner that could be accretive and help us as we're approaching the marketplace and maybe allows us to test some things in the interim or whatever, that might make sense. But we are down to kind of threading a needle. And that's why I've been very careful to say this process may wind up with us doing nothing, but having learned a lot. And it really has, I guess, advanced this whole process of thinking about what our future strategy will be.
It's interesting to me, you know, 10 years, this summer was your 10th anniversary. And when you started, basically, this was the world, the charge was getting the media situation settled.
Yes, I was hired in the to start July 2009. Knowing that our media rights were going to be negotiated in the spring of 2011. So, you know, I pretty much had a little less than 2 years to get up to speed, help develop an overarching strategy, working very closely with our presidents, chancellors, and others, and then a media strategy. But, you know, the media strategy, you know, follows what are the main objectives of the conference. And so I think that it is important have a lot of time to consult and get alignment. But what are the key objectives? You know, the objectives we had in 2011 were really clear. They were around revenue, national exposure, and getting things on TV that hadn't been on TV before. And our objectives going forward will, I'm sure, include that, but I'm sure will include other things as well. You know, we've talked about nighttime games being a real pressure point for our fans and our schools, 6 and 12 day picks, as examples of things, you know, if I had to predict now, will be important objectives to kind of release some of the pressure there, try to be more fan friendly, as well as trying to maximize exposure and revenue. And there may be other things as well.
Does it feel like 10 years? Does it feel like 2, 20?
On the one hand, it's gone very quick. But, you know, there's been a lot that's evolved and changed and I think been accomplished. So there's been kind of waves and cycles. But, you know, it feels like it's gone quick because it's been a very dynamic environment externally as well as internally.
Is there anything that has been a lot different than you had imagined and consistently different? It was different after, you know, the first month and it is still different now.
I would say probably the pace of change, right? So I think we certainly anticipated, as league, if you look at us compared to other leagues, we certainly anticipated there would be paradigm shifts in the world of media. It's one of the reasons we wanted to keep control. We anticipated that technology would be disruptive, consumer habits would change, and by owning and controlling our rights and having everything be coterminous in 2024, we'd have the ability to maybe benefit and be nimble and pivot and adapt and take advantage of opportunities others might not. But I never could have anticipated that we'd be sitting here in 2019 with, you know, ESPN now having an over-the-top streaming service,
right,
and the typical cable and satellite bundle shrinking, and companies like Amazon and Facebook and Apple all being potential big bidders for sports. So I think the pace of change has probably been faster than I thought. And I think we've had more change internally than I could have anticipated. And that's been really challenging for me. And I think for us as a league, you know, I've had 30 different presidents and chancellors that I've worked for.
Probably more than there have been football coaches, or pretty close.
Yeah, I don't think I've done the football coach at it, but I'd say it's similar. And with the changes happening at USC and UCLA, when those athletics directors change over, I will have had 32 different athletics directors during that time. Dan Guerrero at UCLA is the last athletics director that was here when I got hired. And there are only three CEOs, one of whom's retiring, Ed Ray,
right,
at Oregon State, retiring. So I think that's been challenging. And it's something I never really was able to, could have anticipated. And I've had to adjust to and, you know, could have been more nimble in terms of reacting to. When I look back, I probably didn't anticipate. I was probably had to be reactionary in a way that was probably slow to adapt to. Changing attitudes and mindsets. Because when I got hired in 2009, there was a lot of clarity about what our objectives were, what we were trying to do, what the goals were, how we how I should manage things, very CEO-led, whereas they hadn't been involved at all before. And so I think some of the dynamics and the changes internally created real challenges that I was kind of slow to adapt to during that time. I'd say the other thing that's changed in ways I couldn't have anticipated, I think not just as commissioner of the Pac-12 conference, but I think as I kind of observe leadership more broadly and I sit on boards working with CEOs and philanthropic organizations and college football playoff and Rose Bowl and other things, I work with a lot of leaders. And of course, you know, the presidents and chancellors of our universities I get to work closely with, which is one of the more enjoyable, you know, inspiring parts of what I do. I get to work with some tremendous leaders, you know, running these big institutions. I think the dynamics of leadership have really changed in terms of the requirement to be more transparent, to be more inclusive, to deal with social media, to respond more quickly when there are issues, to acknowledge if errors are made and all that. And I think we've gone through a real transformation in terms of what people expect, what the public expects, what our members have expected. So that's been a real challenge for me too.
Two questions for you about the conference dynamics. Could you walk through maybe some of your conversations with presidents, chancellors, or ADs in terms of this shift that we've seen in maybe the last, I don't know, 9-12 months to having a more collaborative, you know, in terms of policy making, the ADs being more involved? How did that all come about?
Yeah, so I think that's probably, you know, a good follow-up even from my answer to the first question. I think the dynamics in general have changed in our league. When I was hired, there was a very clear mandate. Athletics directors have pretty much been running the conference with the commissioner at the time. We, presidents and chancellors, you know, want to take over, want to run, be engaged, and really run the conference with you. Consult, of course, with all the key stakeholders, but, you know, we'll make the decisions. And over time, What became clear, we had a lot of change in terms of presidents, chancellors, athletics directors. A bunch of decisions got made that I think the pendulum swung too far, that I think we did not have the benefit of the experience, the expertise, kind of different vantage point on a lot of things we were doing. And as a result, I think some ADs felt disenfranchised, felt that their advice, you know, the expertise, experience was not being valued either by me as the commissioner or their presidents and chancellors on the board. And I was slow to react. I should have recognized that earlier. And even though I felt like I had a clear mandate, I probably should have recognized that we probably weren't getting all the input and kind of the best minds around things that we should, and that there would be a backlash of some kind. But I think it became clear over the last few years to me, as well as to, you know, a changing landscape of CEOs, that a more inclusive approach, particularly with athletics directors, would benefit everyone. And I've seen the benefit of that. We've worked through some real challenges over the last couple of years that we had. And I think we've been much better for doing it collaboratively and feeling like we're all on the same page. And I think it's particularly timely in that as we're now going through a process of thinking about future strategy and aligning, I think this process and the inclusiveness, I think, will be the way we go about developing our future strategy as well.
So in regard to the CEOs, has there been, with this new wave, do you sense any pivoting in terms of the, I don't know, emphasis given to football and men's basketball relative to the Olympic sports? Not that the Olympic sports are no longer important, but, you know, a bunch of your new presidents and chancellors are coming from football backgrounds, right? Robert Robbins, he's a SEC guy. Kirk Schultz, he's on the management committee, Kansas State. Do you sense that this current lineup has maybe slightly different priorities?
It's really hard to generalize. You know, when we talk about CEOs, A, because there's, you know, 12 unique individuals.
Yep.
And it's constantly changing. So I hesitate to talk about presidents and chancellors as a collective group. But what I have seen is, you know, some common values and priorities, which, you know, frankly, give me a lot of pride about being able to serve, you know, these 12 great institutions. I think as a general rule, our presidents and chancellors, you know, value academics first, want to do things the right way, value the fact that the universities and their athletics departments stand for all-around excellence. I haven't seen that waver, that there's a general pride in that. But I will say over the last few years, there probably has been more discussion we've had about the importance of football as an engine which drives viewership, attention, national reputation, right? What hasn't changed during the 10 years I've been here is that every single year I've been here, we've won more national championships across the board than any other conference. In fact, last year, the gap was probably the biggest it's been. We won 13 national championships last year. Next highest conference was 6, more than double. So our all-around excellence, student-athletes sending to the Olympics, I mean, we're far and away the best conference all around. However, in football and basketball, we've gone through some very tough years. And certainly I've seen, and I think our president's chancellor has seen the impact that has on fans, on national reputation, the media narrative around the conference. I do think the last few years, wake-up call may be too strong, but I think there's been a very real awareness of the impact success in football and basketball can have on the overall reputation and feeling in the communities that we serve.
Hits and misses. 10 years, a lot of decisions. Anything that you're particularly proud of? Any mulligans you'd like to take?
I think there's a long list from my perspective. I'll go quickly. I don't know how long your podcast is, but in terms of things that I think, let's say, have been really successful outcomes, I think, for our members. And these are not decisions I just made, but things that I've worked on collectively with our presidents, chancellors, athletics directors. You know, expansion of the conference, the addition of Colorado and Utah, I think certainly compared to some other examples around the country, I think it's gone exceedingly well. These are two great universities that fit academically, athletically. They've won in the league, and I think that's worked out really well. That allowed us to start a football championship game. And we've had some ups and downs with the football championship game. Started with a home-hosted model, then went to Santa Clara. Now there's a lot of excitement around going to Las Vegas. So, you know, the line from A to B hasn't necessarily been straight, but I think that's going to wind up being a great asset, has been a great asset, will be a great asset for the conference. Likewise, we've improved the men's and women's basketball championships to levels I don't think people could anticipate. Other championships, we financially, you know, you were around at the time, the Pac-10 was $100 million a year revenue entity in total. It's now over $500 million a year. Distributions to members have gone up tremendously during that time, tripled or quadrupled, depending on the school, because we used to not share revenue equally. Now we share it equally, which from my perspective was also a very positive outcome and allowed all schools to develop and create a bit of a competitive equity. I think about exposure. When we were doing our media strategy, there were 90 basketball games in 2010 that weren't on the air at all. There were a handful of football games that were on their local RSN, and that was it. You could not see it anywhere else. So I think unquestionably the level of exposure, the amount of exposure that football, basketball, and our Olympic sports has gotten through our ESPN Fox deal and the creation of our own media company, the Pac-12 Network, has been a big boon for our programs, and particularly Olympic sport, where we excel, that wasn't really getting anything significant before. From a national perspective, we've provided real thought leadership. I talked about some of those things before on student-athlete welfare, benefits, mental health, other things where I know when I came in there was concern that we weren't necessarily always considered a thought leader and driving policy, and I think we've had a chance to do that. I've had a chance to do it through leadership roles with the college football playoff, celebrating the 150th anniversary of college football. I'm pleased that our conference and our presidents and ADs got around an evolution of postseason college football and helped bring the playoff to college football and still preserve an important role for the Rose Bowl, which has done well and thrived during that time. So I think there's a lot of things that I think have been very positive outcomes, certainly not perfect, and we've had plenty of challenges along the way and a lot more work to be done. You know, you asked about mulligans. It's kind of hard to go back and hit the redo button, of course. Sure. The circumstances change. But, you know, the pressure that the night games has put on our fans, you know, I've really regretted to see that. You know, we didn't anticipate that. I think there's still a misunderstanding that people believe the night games have less exposure than the day games. So I think some of the commentary analysis doesn't quite get it right, but I very much feel and see and hear from our schools that there's been a lot of pressure on so many night games. So, you know, if we were hitting the rewind button, could we have given up some money and renegotiated some terms to have fewer night games? I would have liked kind of a redo on that if we had a shot at, you know, doing that one again. I think that's a good example. You know, other things along the way that certainly could have improved upon our transparency and our communication. It's only really last year that, you know, we talked about our financials in ways that made it clearer to people.
Yes.
Here's the Pac-12 Network's revenues and expenses. Here is the conference.
Right.
I put in that, you know, in the category of unforced error, self-inflicted wound. The fact that we weren't more transparent earlier led to an impression that our expenses, compared to our peers, were through the roof running the conference. And you know, people talked about metrics comparing us that I think is our own fault. Had we broken out and more open and transparent about our financials earlier on, I don't think the narrative would have been quite the same. What could I have redone? I should have recognized earlier the value that our athletics directors bring to the conversations and the policy changes. I think we would have had a lot less internal strife and upset, which has led to external perception that people aren't aligned. You know, I take blame for that and not working with our presidents and chancellors to recognize that. And that's still a work in progress. plenty of challenges, things I could have done better, but I feel like there's quite a long list of outcomes that our presidents and chancellors are responsible for with our ADs with me that we can feel very good about that have put us in a much better position than we were in 2009. And I'm really optimistic about where we're going. I know there are real meaningful challenges right now, and we need to start getting to the playoff regularly in football and the Final Four in basketball. But I feel like key pieces are in place, and I think as we approach 22-23, I think when we do our new deals in 24 and people are looking back, I think they will have a very different and much more positive feeling about what this journey's been like than they do sitting here in 2019.
Time, I've always think time moves much slower on those front lines, you know, because they're dealing with all the dynamics with the student athletes on a day-to-day basis, and I don't think 2024 can get here soon enough, you know, for some of the campuses.
And a lot will change between now and then, right? Go back to, you know, the pace of change. I mean, who's sitting around our tables could look very different in 23 than it does now. What the media landscape looks like. But the, you know, I think your point is a good one, too. I think the thing I've also gained a much greater appreciation, I came from outside college sports. I was a student athlete, of course, and worked in pro sports. But it's taken me a while to really appreciate how some of the pressures I talked about with leadership have really changed the job of athletics directors enormously.
Yes.
I mean, they're in, you know, the crisis management business, and the media scrutiny and social media and, you know, politics on campuses. Those are increasingly very, very difficult, challenging jobs. And we've had to evolve and figure out as a league and me as the commissioner, how can we best support our athletics directors, their teams, coaches, given all the challenges they're facing. So I think we're increasingly trying to be as in touch and as supportive. And that's one of the benefits through more collaboration and doing things together. I think we're now doing a better job of having the campus perspective in terms of things we do, where I think we were probably guilty of looking like, you know, we're making decisions that make sense for the conference overall, but without enough of a feel for what the impacts are on campus,
right,
or the feedback from campus. So I think we've gotten better at that, but we've got more work to do.
I'll ask you about two things in specifically. Pac-12 networks, and you know, DirecTV is plowed ground. Could you walk us through the process by which you ended up with the regional networks and the discussions with your original in-demand partners? Because I feel like the structure with the six regionals has, to a certain extent, framed the story of the Pac-12 networks. And what was the objective there? And do you feel like that has at all constrained growth?
Yeah, so the objective in creating the network was very mission-based. It was coming off the heels of signing deals with ESPN and Fox that, you know, basically quadrupled our media revenue. I think it was considered a landmark deal in terms of exposure at the time. I mean, the narrative feels different now, but in 2012, 2013, people were looking at what the Pac-12 did.
Absolutely.
And it was being heralded.
Yes.
As well as the creation of the network. We were only the second league to be able to create a network. It was only the Big Ten at the time. No one thought another league would ever be able to create a network, and we were able to. And, you know, thanks to the conviction of our schools and desire. But it wasn't about money at the time. Again, we had just quadrupled our TV rights. It was about mission and getting exposure for Olympic sports that had never gotten exposure before, because it's such a source of pride and differentiation for our league, and making sure we had a platform to get all football games and all men's basketball games telecast. In so doing, could we do it in a way that also got us into the media business and would have us learn and have options going forward? Those were really the objectives. Interestingly, I think you may have heard this or reported on once before, the first call our media advisors made when we were looking for partners to start was to DirecTV. It was to a guy named Derek Chang.
Yeah.
At the time, he was a good friend, Stanford grad, and he said, go away. We don't want another conference TV network, and we're not going to be your partner in launching. We're going to do everything we can to prevent you from launching a TV network. That was the warm reception we got.
Well, because they thought that they were, in a way, already paying for you all,
yes,
right?
Yes, that was their view. Come on, we're already paying ESPN and Fox, and Versus was around at the time and others, and you can understand it. if you're them, you know, why do I want another network I have to pay monthly fees for on top of what I'm already? It's completely understandable. But that was the reaction we got. Others reacted differently. The main cable companies, so it was Comcast, Time Warner at the time, which is now Spectrum, Cox, they said, okay, we've gone through the experience of the Big Ten Network. We see the value of this network. We'll be your partner in launching it. But one of their requirements in launching the network was not only a national network, which we wanted, but six regional networks in the markets we're in, because for the cable operators, they really are a conglomerate of local businesses.
Yep.
So for Comcast, the Bay Area, Oregon, Washington, Rocky Mountains, those are their kind of territories. Time Warner, now Spectrum, is L.A. Cox is Arizona. So for them, it was important if they were going to make this investment and, in their words, kind of stand us up and help us get going. They wanted us to not just be national, but be, I don't know if it's a word you've heard before, hyper-local. And that was the reason it was important for them. So I guess you can wonder, did that decision make it tougher to then land a national satellite? Well, it didn't make it tougher to land Dish. We found a way to add Dish by having them, carry us nationally. And I know we could have solved. I know that wasn't the rate limiting factor in getting a DirecTV deal, because we did have a deal teed up with DirecTV at one stage, which I brought to the CEO group, but the cost was too high. The pound of flesh they wanted was unacceptable to our schools, and I completely got why. But there is a notion out there that because there are six regional networks, it made it impossible for Dana. It's just not true.
So it was Comcast that suggested the regionals.
It was Comcast, Time Warner,
okay.
Cox, and Bright House, which was Florida. Those four together came together in a consortium called In Demand.
In Demand, okay.
And we negotiated with them as a consortium of the leading cable companies, which was, significant distribution for us as a startup.
So when you decided to launch the network with 100% ownership, you were just thinking one network then? One national network like the Big Ten?
Yes, our original business plan was one network like the Big Ten. It was the cable companies that said, we'll give you what you want, but here's what we want on top, which is this extra local piece.
Second item I wanted to ask you about, officiating. I remember, I believe the first summer after you took over, maybe it might have been a football media day, you talked about, the conferences had trouble with officiating. I'm going to try to get that right. It is hard, obviously. There have been the issue with Ed Rush and Sean Miller, the situation last fall. What is it generally, you think, about officiating that has made it so hard to get right?
Yeah. Well, probably my first mistake was using the term we're going to get it right. Because I guess what I've learned after 10 years, you can never get it 100%. I don't know that, when I talk to my fellow commissioner colleagues in other leagues, when I talk to the NFL and Roger Goodell, I don't think I have a peer out there whose fans think they get it right when it comes to officiating. And the reason is because there are mistakes that are made regularly, and there's so much passion and so much interest, so much outcome, so much on the line, that it creates a tremendous frustration and upset, and a lot of criticism gets leveled. So I think what you can realistically strive for, that we've tried to do, and we've had some successes and some trip-ups and mistakes for sure, is constantly improve and do everything you can to get better. So what's that meant for us in football? I've changed out the supervisor of officials a few times. Dave Kutaya, he's now on ESPN. He was our head of officials. Then we had Mike Pereira that came in. And then Tony Correnti. And now David Coleman. So we've certainly been dynamic in terms of being willing to make changes in leadership. We've made huge investments in training, accountability. The command center, which you've seen in our office, didn't exist before we made big investments in technology, all that. And likewise in basketball, we've experimented with different models, Bill McCabe, Ed Rush, and now we're in a great consortium with other leagues. So we've actually changed models there as well, with Bobby Deibler, who's a leader at the helm. I actually believe, and I think our athletics directors would agree and our coaches would agree, that there have been significant improvements. But there have been some very notable mistakes and errors, and used the word mulligans before. And if we could take a mulligan on, we would, on a variety of things, including what happened last year that led to change. So one of the things I've learned as well is that it's important from time to time to also be prepared to go outside and get some objective feedback and measures and benchmark yourself, be open for change. You know, we had done it once before and brought Mike Pereira in. We did it over the last 12 months in football as a result of the mistakes that were made last year. And Simpson Consulting did a great job. But, you know, I realized we probably shouldn't just do that in response to a crisis. That in this day and age, and what I've said to our folks is this probably just needs to be a steady diet. Let's get out in front of issues, make sure we're challenging ourselves. And so, you know, we haven't had real issues in basketball, but we're going through similar studies. And we're going to go with outside advisors in men's basketball, women's basketball. You know, at a time we don't feel we have to, there's no big problem. Things are going well. But I think big lesson learned, you can never rest on your laurels. There's always a crisis that could hit you at any time. And you need to constantly be open to improvement, investment, making changes where you need to. But I feel like, you know, based on the feedback I get from talking to people nationally, going to outside observers, our programs stack up pretty well. I think this Simpson report said that. Absolutely areas for improvement, but the Pac-12 officiating is not an outlier. All the objective measures and consultants and expert we've gone through says we're doing things very similarly with similar talent that other leagues have. But we've also, you know, this thing I talked about before, as I've learned as a leader, you know, the importance of transparency. I think that's changed in 10 years I'm here, and we may have been slow to do it, but now we're evolving to a more transparent model and admitting if you make a mistake. I mean, not so much that becomes the story, but I think we've really had to adjust our overall approach.
Well, the new transparency model and what you guys did on Sunday, I thought that was terrific, you know, with the ASU-Michigan State game, and using it not only to explain the mistake, but also to try to educate fans on some of the rules, which is a huge component.
Well, I remember at Media Day this year, I think I sat down with you and some other journalists who, you know, made the suggestion that it should be an education component and, you know, use the resources you have here and add some video and do some stuff. So, you know, look, we'll learn a lot this year. I'm sure we won't get it perfectly right, but I hope fans see us making a step in the direction of more accountability, more transparency.
So 2022, if I'm not mistaken, your contract expires in 2022. Do you want to stay? Do you want an extension? Have you had any discussions with Chancellor DeStefano of Colorado or any other?
I have not. No. We haven't gotten to that yet. It's still quite a ways away, and there's a lot of challenges and projects and things that we're working on between now and then. A lot of outside challenges, internal issues we're working on, and I'm very energized by what we are trying to do. I think there's a lot to still be accomplished between now and then. You know, my objective is to put us in a position by 2022, which will be on the eve of getting ready to negotiate, that we're very, very well positioned in all respects and ready to see the kind of a growth that I think we're well set up for. And we'll see then. It will have been, you know, I've been 10 years now, so there'll be a few more years. And, you know, we'll take stock then, and I'll talk to the CEO group then. But, you know, energized every day about what we're working on now. We got some major challenges, major projects we're working on between now and then.
Did you think when you took the job or at any time in the last 10 years that, you know, this is going to be my last job?
No, I've never been someone to, at least on a personal level, to think that far ahead. I was you know, professional tennis player for 3 or 4 years. I never anticipated I'd work in pro sports and then wound up having a 12-year career. I was great in men's pro tennis. Never anticipated then, you know, I'd work in pro women's sports, which I did, and never anticipated I'd come here. So I've always tried to think a few years ahead. I'm very goal-oriented, charge pretty hard at what I'm working toward. But I guess I've become a believer over time. It's good to have a plan, but the world changes rapidly. It's important to be open, be opportunistic where it makes sense. And I've always, you know, if I'm enjoying it, feel like I'm growing, feel like I'm making a contribution, and you know, I'm really the best person to help lead and impact an organization, those are the things that have motivated me. And you know, we'll see what that looks like come closer to 22.
Challenges for the conference moving forward. First one I wanted to ask you about, and I would just like to hear what you think they are, but football playoff, real quick. You've stated in the past that you like four. Other commissioners are with you. Does it make sense for the Pac-12, which has had so much trouble getting into the four, to go to eight. Where do you stand on the what's better for the collective versus what you think the Pac-12 needs?
Well, first thing I'd say is we have to do better in football. And we have to have elite teams break through. I mean, we've got six in the top 25 this week, which is reflective of the depth and caliber that we've got. But when we started the playoff, now it's very much, for many people, become about, did you make the playoff or not? That is what it is. And maybe that's an unintended consequence or byproduct of what we've created. But I think it's a fair assessment of the reality. So we've got to more frequently have teams in the playoff. That's the expectation, you know, I have, I know our presidents and chancellors have, I know our athletics directors have, and there's a tremendous amount of effort and work that our ADs are doing in terms of investing in facilities, hiring coaches, supporting them with pools for assistance and analytics, support for student athletes. I mean, people are laser focused on getting better at football because we're not satisfied with where we're at. And if we are, I think the rest does kind of take care of its whatever system you're in. I don't care if we have a 4-team, 6-team, 8-team, or 12-team. If we're not elite and winning regularly, I don't think that really changes fundamentally the overall because we'll be compared to peers and we need to do better compared to our peers. Having said that, I think given what's happened, surely it would take some pressure off this narrative that, you know, you're either in or out if it were a bigger playoff where the Pac-12 had an automatic slot. So we're open to looking at it. We've started conversations. I've started conversations with my peers that make up the management committee of the college football playoff. I don't think there's anything imminent about that. We've got contracts that go through 2026 for the college football playoff with ESPN and all that. Doesn't mean something couldn't happen earlier, but, you know, there's some significant impediments to anything happening earlier than that. So, you know, we're engaged in those conversations. I'm engaged in those conversations, open to the fact that there could be a better mousetrap, even though the move from the BCS to the college football playoff, 14 playoff, has been really good for college football. We've taken some hits by not being in, but if I take a step back as a steward of college football and the college football playoff, I think it's helped elevate the popularity and interest in college football. So, and we've been able to do it in a way, as I said earlier, and still preserve the importance of Rose Bowl. We've had some great Rose Bowl games, and that was awesome for Washington last year, and Stanford and other schools have had great appearances there. So I think it's been positive, but I think what's maybe more important than the format of the playoff is that we just get better.
Other challenges that you see, maybe taking the California Assembly legislation off the table. Is there anything else?
Yeah. Well, I think what, you know, the California legislation is emblematic of, you know, external threats and challenges, which are plenty. You know, we've had them in the O'Bannon case, the Alston case, this, you know, U.S. Congress, other states. So I don't think those are going to stop. I think, you know, college sports is incredibly popular, big, and it's got kind of a target. You know, we'll be part of vigorously defending college sports and student athletes and not being employees. So that's a big one. I mean, the external challenges. I think internally, you know, our performance in football and men's basketball, you know, we're an elite conference with an amazing tradition, and continuing to win across the board is super important for our schools in terms of the mission. But I think everyone understands we've got to do better in football and basketball to maintain our positioning nationally. Resources, of course, super important. You know, there is an arms race, whether you like it or not. I think our schools realize that. I think our, you know, schools pinch their nose sometimes at what they have to do and spend to stay competitive, but are committed. And our presidents or ADs are committed to excellence across the board and trying to do things the right way. And our schools don't feel that they have to break records in terms of what they spend on athletics, because we do have a lot of baked-in incredible advantages. There's a lot of magnets that draw coaches, student athletes, administrators to want to be part of, you know, this league, which is full of excellence. But we do need to be able to be competitive.
Kind of a pop quiz question here. 2009, there are 10 members. 2019, there are 12 members. 2029, there will be how many members?
I couldn't begin to guess. I mean, if history is any predictor of the future, it'll be larger. than it is now. I don't think we've gone too many decades in a row where there hasn't been, you know, growth. I guess there was a big patch between, 1978 Pac-10 and then the Pac-12. It feels like the pace of change is speeding up. So it's really hard to say. I think if we're not interested in expanding at the moment, we're not talking about it, we're not looking at it. I think the drivers that I can see would involve change in postseason college football, television agreements, financially, or possibly some type of legislation or a legal action that could reconfigure schools based on their priorities and their values. If there were any change to amateurism, for example, I think that could lead to a reconfiguration, because I'm sure there's some well-known schools in the country and in our conference that are committed to maintaining amateurism, student-athletes, as part of an overall educational mission.
Where are there any ongoing discussions, or were there with the Big 12 and Commissioner Bob Oldsby, about some kind of strategic alliance that would provide a bunch of non-conference games for each school, helping the content, getting fans out, right? Fans would want to go see those games more than an FCS opponent. Plus, for TV, you have every time zone covered because you can start at 11 a.m. Central Time. Bob told me many months ago that there had been some discussions. I didn't know if anything has percolated since.
Nothing recent, but I have had conversations with Bob, who's a good friend, was
right.
Stanford AD when I got hired. We have talked about scheduling or strategic alliances. Nothing's made sense up till now. I've had similar conversations with Jim Delaney at the Big Ten several years ago about a schedule before their most recent expansion, when they added Rutgers and Maryland. We were talking about a concept he was interested in instead of that. That would have had us play each other more often. Our schools do play each other with some regularity. They see each other as peers playing against each other, but would have formalized that. And, so that's a good example of what's the role of the commissioner with the members. I look at my role as trying to reflect the innovation that our schools represent, be out there, try new ideas and see what makes sense. But the ultimate decision makers are the schools. I serve on their behalf. So sometimes I'll propose some things that, don't make sense or they reject, whether it was DirecTV deal at one stage, an alliance with the Big Ten, moving into esports or other things. I think people sometimes, in these roles, you're a servant leader. People expect you to go out there and consider ideas like we're doing now, even with the exploration of the media stuff. I mean, we can develop, great opportunities with a private equity company, but ultimately and appropriately, it's the role of presidents and chancellors with the input of athletic directors to decide, does this make sense for us at any given time? And, these alliances and expansion, there have been several things we've worked on and proposed that didn't make sense to the schools, and that's good. So there is a real check and balance there. And then, get feedback and you go out and work on something else.
Can't thank you enough for spending the time with me, going through 10 years, a lot of news now, plus 10 years, lots going on. So thank you so much.
Appreciate it, John.